it's always nice to be here. The first song we sang spoke about God being our guardian. The next one was Jesus as the Son. I feel I'm here as your Daily Mail. Or should speak on the signs of the times, one or the other. Anyway, the theme we've got is freed to love. And just to say why I brought Jill with me, a few times I've spoken, and you always have a local mission focus, which is brilliant. And a couple of times it's been 125. And I really want to champion 125. Ree was involved right at the start, and she managed it. She ran the organisation for several years. I've been a trustee. Recently, one of my roles has been to just help a group rediscover what a Christian ethos really means. You know, when you work with some agencies, there's always a danger of it being too Christian for some agencies, not Christian enough for some churches, and just trying to explore how we express the Christian ethos that has been foundational in 125. And also, Ree and I, we offer ourselves just to be available to pray for any staff, women, or clients who just need some prayer in a sort of chaplaincy type role. And a couple of times we've had the privilege of praying for women who have exited the streets but still carry baggage and hurt and pain. And so I have no hesitation in wanting to champion 125. And so I asked Dave Tubbs, would it be possible then if I could incorporate 125 into the talk and you hear more specifically, and it ties in so perfectly with the theme of today, and just have some prayer for Jill and 125 at the end. So that's why things are a bit different. I hope that's okay. And also because you've heard all my sermons anyway. So if I can get someone else, you'll... My kids always tease me, I've only got one sermon, but lots of titles. And today's title is Free to Love. And it's taken from Ephesians chapter 2, verses 11 to 22. Don't forget that you Gentiles used to be outsiders. You were called uncircumcised heathens by the Jews, who were proud of their circumcision, even though it affected only their bodies and not their hearts. In those days, you were living apart from Christ. You were excluded from citizenship among the people of Israel, and you did not know the covenant promises God had made to them. You lived in this world without God and without hope. Interesting, someone once gave a definition of poverty as poverty is not the absence of money, it's the absence of hope. And what we'll hear today is about women in the BS postcode. Is that right? Which you are. who try to bring hope to the hopeless. But now you've been united with Christ Jesus. Once you were far away from God, but now you've been brought near to him through the blood of Christ. For Christ himself has brought peace to us. And we'll be hearing about chaotic lives who are discovering peace. He united Jews and Gentiles into one people when in his own body on the cross he broke down the wall of hostility that separated us. There's a lot more verses. What I'm very conscious of is there's such a depth in these verses. Please don't expect me to fully explain it. Just pick out some things because it's a wonderful passage. To me, what the cross is all about is the cross reshapes all that was lost in the fall. You know the story in Genesis of the fall? What happened because of man's selfishness and sin? Barriers came. Barriers between God and mankind. Barriers between male and female. Barriers between ethnic and social barriers. All these started to emerge and hostility happened. And to me, the wonderful thing about the cross is that the cross is about breaking down barriers. And Paul, writing to the church in Galatia, he said, you know, in Christ Jesus, the barriers are down. There's neither Jew nor Gentile. There's neither rich nor poor, male nor female, bond or free. The barriers are down. And the wonderful thing about the cross is that the barriers are down. So we can come here knowing there are no barriers. And so often in the church, we still have these barriers. And sometimes these barriers are caused by fear. There's a church that I was very much involved with in the north of England some years ago. And they prayed that God would send to their church service people who didn't know Jesus. which is an interesting prayer because I think God prays that the church will send the church to people, whereas we often pray that God will send people to the church. But that's what they prayed. And God answered their prayer. And every week a group of homeless men would come. And the church couldn't cope. Because what they were really praying is, God, send us people who we can make like us, who will fit into our culture and ethos. Because we sometimes still have these barriers up. And what the cross is about is breaking down barriers. And what the cross is about as well, I believe, one of the major things to me that happened at the fall is that the image of God was tarnished. When God made man, man was incomplete. He made man and woman, and together they expressed the image of God. And sadly, because of sin, barriers came up. So gender barriers came up, which I think we still see in the church. And I'm so thrilled that, you just sent a letter out recently saying that's a barrier that needs to come down. But all these barriers were up, and it tarnished the image of God. And what we need to believe, I think, as Christians, is that in everybody, there's something of God's image. And what Calvary does is it starts to restore that image. And for Jill, as we'll hear, with the women that they're working with, that image has got so tarnished. But what I'm thrilled about 125 and other organizations is they see through the hurt and the pain, and they see the image of Jesus. So what the cross is all about to me is it breaks barriers down. In Christ Jesus, there's neither Jew nor Gentile, bond nor free, male nor female. The barriers are down. And I think we've got a challenge. If that is really true, how will that shape how we do church, which if there's time we'll look at? But what I'm so thrilled about with 125 is, we put barriers up, and sometimes we keep those barriers up, and it might be pride. We are better than others. We can't let inferior people be a part of us. Or sometimes it's fear. We don't understand. Or sometimes it's self-preservation. But my prayer is that as we see something fresh of the cross today, if we've got barriers up, whether it be ethnic barriers, homophobic barriers, whether it be cultural barriers, that those barriers will start to break, because that is what the cross is all about. And I'm going to invite Jill. It's a real thrill to have Jill. Jill and John are really good friends of Ree and mine. John's not here because he's a City supporter, so you can guess where he is. But Jill does a wonderful job leading 125, and she's going to talk about how they're free to love women who desperately need the image of God restored in their lives. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave. It's lovely to be here with Dave. I'm really grateful to Dave and to Ree for all the support they give me personally, as well as the support they provide for 125. Thanks, Dave. But I'd also like to thank you at Thornbury Baptist Church. I'd like to thank you on behalf of all the service users at 125, because for as many years as I can remember, and I also live in the BS postcode, but in Alverston, just up the hill, but for as many years as I can remember, I've come down the hill to Joan. I don't know if Joan's here now, but Joan Jones, and I've collected cakes from her. Filled my boot up with these lovely, delicious cakes and taken them back to 125, and the women have so enjoyed them. And sometimes the women say, where did those cakes come from? Who made them? And I explain, well, there's this church in Thornbury, and they love you and care for you, and they make cakes. And the women are so grateful for that. So thank you. So I don't know if there's any slides. I did bring some pretty pictures. I don't know if I've got them. Oh. Well, to add some context to what I'm going to say, I'd like to talk about the work of 125, and I'm going to start with our vision and our mission and our values. So our vision is a community where all women are valued and they're able to live fulfilled lives without the risk of being trapped in street sex work. Now, that's likely to be the community you live in. You probably are already that community. But for many women in Bristol, that's not the case. And if the women we support at 125 were to feel truly valued and to live fulfilled lives, then they certainly would not be out there on the streets of Bristol, putting themselves at risk of danger and abuse night after night after night. And they do it because they're trying to obtain a small amount of drugs, which will cover up layers upon layers upon layers of pain and suffering that have been going on for so many years in their lives, probably since they were very young children. And that those drugs that they're out there to sell their bodies to get those little bit of drugs, they'll just make life bearable for the next few hours, and then the life cycle will continue. And that is how the women are living. So our mission is to go and break that cycle so they don't have to do that anymore. And our values are integral to helping us achieve that mission. And our top three values are to be person-centred, and that is to support the women where they are, to meet their individual needs at the pace of the individual, at the pace of the women, with no limits and no restraints on our support. And the second value is to give unconditional love. The 125 staff and volunteers demonstrate love to the marginalised, expecting absolutely nothing in return. For most of the women, they've never experienced this before. Women sometimes ask us, well, why do you do this? Why do you come out at night? Haven't you got a family and a home? What are you doing out here on the streets? And again, we tell them it's because we care for them, and they're not used to that. Prayer is on offer, but it's never forced. And it's never presented as something we would expect in return for what we give. Our love and our actions are our prayer. And the third top three value is to be non-judgmental. The women already judge themselves and despise themselves harshly. They feel stigmatized and they feel despised by society. For the women here today, just think about yourselves, and for the men, think about your wives, sisters, daughters, mothers. And if any of us had taken a different turn, or if we'd lacked healthy and positive choices in our lives, if we'd been oppressed, if we'd been exploited, if we had esteem absolutely at rock bottom, and as a consequence, we'd become trapped in addiction, well, then it could be us out there, or somebody we know, or somebody close to us. So what do we do? If I go to the next slide, this is our services. I'm going to talk about our services quickly. What do we do to achieve our mission? Well, we outreach to the women. We take our van out onto the streets at night to where the women are working. We drive around and they can jump on the van. It's like a little bit of light in the darkness of their night. They can be safe, they can have food and drink and support, be surrounded by people who care for them, and from there we'll encourage them to come to our drop-in. If I look at the next slide, that's just us preparing for outreach, getting the food ready, briefing ourselves, making sure we're ready for the night's work. And from there we can ask the women to come on into our drop-in centre, which on the next slide, it doesn't look like a drop-in, does it? It's a beautiful, cosy home. We want it to, the women can come in and feel safe. We want them to own it and to feel it's theirs. And they certainly do. They have a lot to say in the way it looks and what we cook and when it's open. And they have a long time been asking, please could you open more? Please could you open at night when we really need you? This has always been quite a challenge for us, resource-wise, to be able to say, well, okay, we'll open at night, because we have to recruit volunteers that will work at night. It's a whole different ball game, but we've finally thought, let's do it. And so we're going to be on April the 10th opening our night drop-in, opening this centre from midnight till 6 in the morning on a Friday initially, But the idea is that we build those nights until we open every night of the week. And in that drop-in, the women can, they can see a doctor, they can see a nurse, we've got clinics going on. They can have a shower, have some clothing, have a hot meal, and have lots of support and advice. And our workers are on hand. Our workers work in the office upstairs. They're often out in the field seeing the women, but they also come down and meet them in the drop-in as well. So it's a real hive of activity, but an awful lot of support on offer. It's where the women can start to do their healing. It's where they can start to say, do you know what? Yes, I'll have the support you're offering me. Let's make some changes. So it's a wonderful place. And the casework team. So the casework team are our specialist workers who work with the women on a one-to-one, very individual basis, supporting them around all the muddle of needs, which are kind of around health and housing and finance and addiction and family and abuse. And it's an endless list, and it's a big muddle of mess that they just cannot sort out on their own. But with help and with time, we can start to unravel all of that mess and build a new life for the women. And it does work. We see women exit all the time. Okay, so moving to our next slide. Well, we couldn't do this work without prayer. Prayer is fundamental. Prayer is vital. For 20 years now, God has guided 125 and has provided for our needs so that we can provide for the women. 125 was built on prayer. It was built by our founder, Val Giel, started 125, and she couldn't have started without months and years of constant prayer. And the van, our first van, was delivered to us as a result of prayer, an absolute miracle. She prayed so hard for a van, and literally that same night, somebody knocked on the door and handed her the keys and a logbook for our first van. And I believe God is breaking down barriers. He's doing this by allowing the women, and there are a few men, who have a heart for the marginalised. He's bringing them to 125, staff and volunteers and trustees, to come alongside and to be the hands and the feet of Jesus, reaching out and showing love. I've got some quotes here. They're quotes from volunteers who do the work. Somebody said, by serving and loving others is to live Christ and to become more like him, to grow in love, always remembering when Jesus said, whatever you do for the least of these, you do to me. And another volunteer said, volunteering helps me to live out my beliefs. We've got some more quotes. This is from a woman. One of our women, she was struggling to read the Bible, so we asked a volunteer to put Bible passages onto an MP3 player, and we donated it to this woman. And this is what she said. My first reaction was that I wanted to cry. What can I say? It has blessed me so much. Now I can walk around the house with the Bible encouraging me. It helps me walk around with God every day. Thank you so much. Words cannot express how I'm completely feeling at your generosity. Okay, and I think I've got a few more quotes for you without overdoing it. An ex-service user said, thank you so much for your support and prayers. They mean so much. My prayers are always inclusive of you and 125. I hope one day I can show you the works God has done in my life. Well, I see that every day, because I see I know so many women now who have exited. I've been at 125 many years, and over the years, I've seen them exit, and we stay in touch, and I see what God's doing in their lives. Okay. So I'm going to finish with a story. It's not too long. It was some years ago, but it's still very relevant. And this was a lady who had been working the streets for a couple of years, and one night she was on the streets. Another girl said to her, have you seen that big van that comes round, the 125? if you see them, they're all right. Go and have a cup of tea with them. So she did. And she said it was amazing. And then she kind of forgot about us for a bit until another night she was out and she saw the van and she thought, oh, I'm going to go on there again. So on she got. And when she got on, one of the women who was on the van remembered her from the time before and said, I haven't seen you for a while. How are you? And she even remembered her name. And this woman was bowled over by that. She said that she just wasn't used to people acknowledging her, and especially remembering her name. She said that since the age of 11, she'd been a heroin addict. 11. I mean, I've got a granddaughter of 10. I can't imagine that. And she'd lived in every major city, and she'd ended up in traveller's sites. And social services came along and took her first child because she just wasn't in the place to look after that child. And she couldn't fight the system, and she needed money, and she needed drugs. And working the streets was all she thought that was left for her. And she thought, well, it's better than what I've been through, and I'll just have to get on and do it. At least it gets me some money. But then the people at 125 got alongside her. And for 5 years, we had worked with her, and we'd become her friends, and we'd helped her to increase her esteem. She said that she wanted to die when she met us. She said that she couldn't understand why people who had their own house would even bother to come and speak to her. And then she said, never mind Christians. If I went out on the van, she said, I knew I would end up crying because at some level, she said, I knew that they would reach me and it would go deep. She says now, well, at the time she wrote this, which is a few years back, she said that she hadn't been working on the streets for 4 years. The turning point came when her health was really an issue. Her arteries kind of exploded in her legs, she said, and she nearly died a few times. But her worker at 125 kept on visiting her and kept on encouraging her, helped her find accommodation, helped her get some money, helped her start to build up a life. And she became pregnant again and kept that child as well. So with a lot of loving care, she built a new life for herself. And she now goes to a free church in Bristol. And she came and did some volunteer work for 125. She wanted to give back. And she said that she used to go to church when she was a youngster. And she said, on the streets, when I came down from the crack, I used to hear the church bells, and it would make me cry. So it's something stuck there in her heart, I think. I didn't want to think about God. I didn't want to think about myself. But now I really feel blessed. I don't know why I went through what I did, but I know that it happened for a reason. And God has a plan for every one of us. She just doesn't know what it is for her just yet. Okay. Well, I'm just going to finish with one big statistic. I purposely didn't come today to hit you with loads of stats, and I could, because I've got loads. But I just wanted to leave you with this stat, that last year, 45 women who were trapped in street sex work on the streets of Bristol broke free and exited from that lifestyle. That's about 1 in 4 of the women we meet on outreach. So that's fantastic. And this year, I think we're going to see a higher number again. So I just thank God for 125. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Should I stay?
She'll be around at the end if you have got any questions, unless anybody wants to ask any questions now. It's either more of a sermon from me or answers from Jill. Any questions on anything that's been said? You can. It's always hard when they don't ask questions. You think, have I answered everything, or didn't they understand a word of it? There's a question.
Yes.
Melanie.
People have reacted to those wonderful gospel stories about Jesus
actually shared... Oh, dear, I think I'm right in front of the speaker, am I? I haven't shared stories as such with the women, but the women just feel so touched by the love that we show them, and that we just go out and show love and care for them. And that touches them, actually, because they say to us, why? Why? Because they feel so unloved, and they despise themselves, that to feel loved, we're taking Jesus' love to them. And that they do react to. I see that every day. Thanks, Dave.
Any other questions? Let me just pull a few things together, because, as I said at the start, what the cross is about to me is it breaks barriers down. As this passage said, you know, there were the Jews, then Gentiles, and this wall of hostility. What barriers have we erected? Some years ago, Ray and I were in Zambia, and the church there, Ray at that time was doing Jill's job. Their 1-2-5 was a lot smaller then, and the pastor asked Ray, she'd talk about the work that she was doing with women in prostitution. So Ray told some stories and very warmly received. And at the end of the service, she said to the pastor, what do you do if women in prostitution come to the church? He said, oh, we send them away. Because we still have these barriers. Some friends of mine, their son came to them, and maybe I've told the story here before, a few years ago, and he's gay. And he knew that he had to tell his dad, but he knew, because he'd got some sort of faith, and his parents were strong members of our church community, he wasn't sure, should he say it? And so he Googled, what was God's attitude to the gay community, which is not a good thing to do. And he found some extreme right-wing things that said how, you know, stoning would be adequate sort of thing. And so he thought, well, I can't possibly tell my dad, and he got this network of friends, but he eventually did. And his dad's heart just went out, because obviously he loved his son, but thinking, my son and his friends feel so disconnected from the church because the church has set up barriers. And so what they did, they started a gay alpha with another couple, and they had about 7 or 8 guys come along. This was going really well until one of the guys fancied the husband of the other couple. So they had a few things to work out. But what all these guys said was, we don't feel we can go into churches. And some had tried. And some had felt, you know, there is a barrier. And I think the challenge for us is, if we've seen something of the cross and we're free to love, we change from going to church to being church. And several women, and certainly Ree had this experience, would say to Ree, would talk about, you know, maybe they had a funeral to sort out or something. And Ree said, where should we do it? And they say of the Grosvenor Centre, this is our church. Not because it was a building, but it was a place where the unconditional love was accepted, where unconditional love had touched their heart. And so these friends, they started the Gay Alpha. And some of the guys there would never feel comfortable to come into our nice middle-class churches. And so we've got a challenge. For a time, we had had a minibus load of guys from the Crisis Centre come to BCF. We had a woman who was working there, and the guys loved her. Some fancied her a bit too much, but they would always come because she said, I will take you to a church on a Sunday. Now, that was quite a challenge, because these guys had never sat through a talk like this. And after 10 minutes, they'd want to get up and go outside for a fag. And you always feared that there'd be some well-meaning, righteous, nice Christians who would tut-tut at the disruption. It meant that if we broke bread, we had to have grape juice. We couldn't have wine, because it wouldn't be healthy. It made us think, well, how do we do church if we really want those barriers to be down so that people can embrace something of God's love? Then how we express church has got to change. Because if the cross of Christ transforms me and it transforms us, then we've got to be prepared to let it transform church. And a church I worked with in the States, it was right on the edge of a student halls of residence. So they had this real sense, we've got to reach the students. And they asked me what I thought. And they met at some unearthly time in the morning. It was even earlier than 9:15. So I said, well, I can only speak about England, but if you want to reach students, that is not the time. And there's got to be food. And the immediate response from one or two is, but we've always done it this way. But they did change. And now they've got a thriving student work there. And they throw the building, it's a very nice building, open for student study evenings or student food, you know, all sorts of things. Because they thought, well, if the gospel, the story of the cross has transformed me, then we've got to be prepared to let it transform how we sometimes express church. Because what I think the women starting to connect with 125 are finding is not going to church, it's being involved in the church family. Because church is family. This passage goes on to say, and I'll just read the last few verses. So now you Gentiles, you're no longer strangers and foreigners. The barriers are down. And it's I have to think, you know, well, what barriers have I set up? Set up for people who don't believe quite what I believe, or would spend their money in a different way from me, or would be from a different cultural background. Because I might think all the barriers are down and then something happens. And I think, yeah. I once saw a T-shirt that said, I support Wales and anyone playing England. And it's a joke, but you know, we can still have some sort of barriers up, can't we? And what the cross is about is the barriers being down. You are members of God's family. You are God's holy people. The image of God is being restored. And what I love about 125, and as I said, we sometimes straddle this this difficult path in 125 of being too Christian for some and not Christian enough for others. And it is a tension to walk down. But what I see is that they see the image of God in the women they work. And love starts to bring that image out. It gives the self-esteem. Together we are his house, built on the foundations of the apostles and prophets. The cornerstone is Jesus Christ himself. We're carefully joined together in him, becoming a holy temple for the Lord. Through him, you Gentiles are also being made a part of this dwelling where God lives by his Spirit. So I think the challenge for us is, not specifically 125, but if I've been touched by Calvary love, how can I express that? We love, we're told, because he first loved us. If I'm free to love, who can I express that to? And it might be because of where you've placed geographically or 101 other reasons. 125 might not be the main area where you can be connected. And I know you are doing a lot in mission. So I realize, in a sense, I'm preaching to the converted. But it might be there are some people and think, yeah, that is something I could do. You have fed hundreds and hundreds of women from Thornbury Baptist Church in the center of Bristol. Why? Because some people are saying, yeah, that is something I can do. Kate Potter, who's out the back somewhere, she was a trustee for some time till the preponderance of children stopped that. But, you know, some people can serve in lots of ways. The essence is, it's time if we've embraced the love of God so that we're free to love. And that word from Myrtle was freedom from barriers. How can I express that? And maybe some can bake cakes, and that is essential. Maybe some can say, well, that isn't my passion. My passion is children in need in Thornbury or old people in the area. You know, it might be different, but we're free to love. And as God is restoring his image in us, let's go out and see the image of God in those where it's been tarnished by hurt, by abuse, just by not knowing him, and bring that same freedom to see them free to love as well. I'd be really grateful if one or two folk would like to pray for Jill and 125. perhaps Paul and David Myrtle. Helen Harrison, you've been involved with 125, haven't you, or been supportive of it. Jill, can you just come out? And it might be that one or two others would like to pray. Jill carries an enormous load, constantly facing heartache. So it'd be great to pray that God will fill Jill again with his spirit. But it might be one or two of you would just like to pray. 45 women exited prostitution in Bristol last year. And that's the start of the journey, because they've got addiction to overcome. They've got to find peace in chaotic lives, but they've had some hope given to them. And poverty is not the absence of money, it's the absence of hope.